Closed captioning of this program is brought to you in part by Pariah Pickups. What you want, what you need, what you love. Visit PariahPickups.com and at Pariah Pickups on Instagram. And LoudTracks.com. Visit LoudTracks.com to get your favorite band merchandise and purchase a Jeremy White Podcast t-shirt to support the channel.
Hey, this is Gavin from Bush, and you're listening to The Jeremy White Show.
The Jeremy White Podcast. Tuesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Whoa.
Yo, what's up?
I know. Wow, guys, I'm in hell. Perfect. I love it.
I know. It's like being in a candy store, isn't it, Gray?
That's my jam.
That's what we call it, the candy store studios. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Good, Gavin.
Good. Yep. Good day. And by the way, Gavin, I'm just going to start with this, but 9 years ago, it showed up in my Facebook memories. I was at your show with Seether and Bush, and I forget who the third band was, but I was there as a photographer, concert pit stuff. So 9 years to the day.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to us, yes.
Happy anniversary. Get a room, you two. Jeez.
It's 2021. You don't even need to get a room anymore.
Exactly. Right? Do it all in the open. Why not, right? Well, let's get right into it. Our next guest is legendary frontman of one of the greatest bands to come out of the 90s. New television series called No Cover is going to be in the works. They've already gone through the applicants. I want to talk all about that. Plus, Kingdom came out last summer. All that and more. Welcome to the show, Mr. Gavin Rossdale.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is so great. So Mitch and I were just kind of joking off the air about this new TV show. It's like, you know, you've got American Idol and The Voice and all these shows, but you guys are literally looking for a genuine, legitimate new band to come out and play originals and make it on their own with their own tunage. Yes. You know, like, what kind of challenges come along with that?
Good lyrics.
Lyrics? Yeah.
Good lyrics. Good lyrics. You know, it's... As a lyricist, you know, someone's given myself to music, it's an ironic conundrum that some of the time the lyrics seem to be the last thing that people are kind of paying attention to. But there were some great people in there, and we weeded them out, and I had a great time. The other judges were amazing. There was a really good balance of people. And it was just fun to have a job. You know, I mean, I went to every day to work and just hung out and, like, you know, just had to go there and give my opinion. I was like, you know, normally if I go to a set, it's like if I'm in a movie, I have to know lines, TV show, I don't know lines, a video, you got to know the words, you got to feel good, this, that. This was like, could you show up and tell us what you think? I was like, hell yeah.
Getting paid to give my opinion, finally.
Yeah, anytime.
And I mean, you got to hang out with the Coop. You got to hang out with Alice Cooper.
Yeah, that's the greatest thing,
man.
Right there.
But, what a sweetheart.
Talk to me just real quick about the challenges that these artists and that the show is going to have maybe connecting with fans. Because, you know, when you watch some of these other shows, you hear a guy singing, you go, oh, Adam Lambert is singing that White Snake song. Great. This is fantastic. Mm-hmm. This time they don't have that crutch in a sense. So what do you tell the artists and how do you convey that to the public to say, hey,
the main thing that I felt, the gist of it that I got from being on there was, the hardest thing for up and coming people or musicians is to be inspired by their favorite artists, right? But yet present their voices, themselves. And that was the biggest dilemma, really, was a lot of people, like some bands, like a couple of bands, like I could think of immediately, that had the most incredible musicians, these kids, you can't believe how good they are. But the last thing they've done, they've learned how to play, like one kid just plays like Eddie Van Halen. It's just unbelievable. But the problem is that we had Eddie and we know Eddie. And this kid is like 16. And so it's all like, dude, just you know, music is a beautiful legacy. It's a process of like passing the baton. But you don't take that same baton. You just get inspired by it. So the trick was to find people that... were proficient, had great history in music, but really their own voices. And then some people were like nearly really great. That's a really tricky one because no one, you know, it's really, what are you going to do? You're seventh. But basically everyone that got through had a lot of talent. And I don't know how it's going to come across. I tried not to be too Simon Cowell-like, but I was honest.
Well, you got the accent, so that's half the battle.
Yeah, that's racist. That's racist.
Hey,
that's racy.
So, I mean, well, you just said the kid, you know, was up there playing like Eddie Van Halen. I mean, you know, does he just bust out Eruption in the middle of the audition? Like, you know, like, or is it just
the technique that he's using? That degree of ability, that level of ability, it's quite stunning. But, you know, there's a difference. Like, if you take a classical musicians, for example, classical musicians, you know, if you want to completely trigger a classical musician, absolutely, just tell them to improvise. Mm-hmm. They just, no, we don't improvise. They study 6 hours a day, they read, that's it. So there's a danger that you could be really good at an instrument, but that doesn't mean like—
You're actually really good.
Which doesn't mean that you have anything to say. I mean, they're probably all better guitar players than me, but I've had a really long career because it's the ideas that go with it. It's not just the ability, because you can keep going and find there's always someone better than you that plays better, plays faster, plays weirder. But it's like, you know, there's only one Stevie Wonder. There's only one Prince. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you got to do, is find your voice. And so I think all of us, we had a very good, consistent approach to helping these people realize their dreams, was like, just be— the more you can be yourself, the more interesting, the more weird, and the more particular you are to yourselves. Mm-hmm. That's what we like. That's all I pushed on them. So, you know, it's going to be edited, and I don't know if I'm going to come across that look like a jerk, but I try to be kind. I try to be nice.
Hey, just real quick on that, in terms of musical genre or musical style, did it matter if it was a rap artist or a rock artist? What were you looking for particularly?
A character. I mean, there was one band who were my favorite, and they were so heavy. It was like a body count. It was so heavy.
Wow.
And so dangerous and so exciting. And I voted for them, and I was pushing to get them in the next round. They didn't have any more songs. I was like, so I was fighting, and then the producers afterwards, because there was a mercy council, so people can get saved and this and that. And I said, did they make it? And they go, no, because we went to the studio and they just literally didn't have any more songs. It's like, they only had three songs. It's like, well,
damn,
dudes, could you get a bit more ready? This is your break, fuck's sake. So
we didn't expect to get to the fourth round. Sorry.
Yeah. Wasn't prepared for another question.
We didn't know we needed more than an EP. I mean,
yeah, that's what I mean. I was like, guys. And I think what happened is that they honestly had one guy that sounded like he was in Sepultura, and one guy who sounded like Chuck Billy. Chuck D.
Oh, wow.
Oh no, I mean, they were legit. I loved them. My money was all on them until I found out they didn't have any more material. I was like, I would have written a song for them in the morning.
Yeah.
Help them out.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, do you bring somebody in like Desmond Child or, you know, Gavin Rossdale to co-write with you for the album or?
Yeah. It's up to them. I mean, they were so street, just looking cool as fuck, and I just was like, these guys have got it. I was like, yes. I was like, finally, they're gonna take you by the head and like throw you around, and then it didn't work out. The other people, there was an act that's more like their band Fantagram. They were more like adult. Like, I loved them. They were great. Wow. Musically, they were great. She was really good, and they were very accomplished. They hadn't had a break. They were a little bit older than the other band, but they were brilliant. So I really voted for them. So it was weird, but I think the best that we saw won.
Well, what I would say. You said something really interesting at the top there, where you said, you know, you kind of want to take your influences and sort of go a little bit further with it. You know, when you talk about Bush and, you know, those first couple albums, I mean, you're in the mid 90s where grunge is really at the top of peak. And I mean, you know, you grew up through the 80s and stuff. What was it? Did you connect with those bands at all in the 80s, like the Def Leppards and Motley Crue's? Or
no, I couldn't. I mean, I'm actually really good friends with Tommy Lee, so I don't want to say anything about Motley Crue. Being from England, we didn't know them. That's not a band, anything. So in England, it was all The Four, My Bloody Valentine, The Pixies. That's what it was. That's what the 80s was to me.
So jam. Like
punk music that had gone beyond the three chord style of the 70s when it began, you know, post-punk. And now you have idols and bands like that that I fucking think are brilliant, you know, amazing band.
But what was it about those 80s bands that just didn't speak to you?
The artifice of it. I don't, Europe, artifice. I don't like artifice in music. I don't like it. That's why I like the Pixies. When I first heard the Pixies, I was like, I was super into reggae, and I just liked the Pixies because it was aggressive. So I like Public Image. So I went from the Sex Pistols. I was obsessed with the Sex Pistols. So after John Lydon left the Sex Pistols, he goes into Public Image Limited. That's mm-hmm. where I learned about bass and jar wobble and the whole cycles of repetition, the whole bass, Glenn Branca thing, bass, bass, bass. And so then all the sound systems in London where I grew up, you'd have like, you know, all the sound systems, so the toasters, the rap, not the MCs. Mm-hmm. And that culture was part of my culture, but I like the punk ethic. So when I saw the Fall or the Pixies, I thought they're amazing. And then I had her. Then I went to see. I saw Jane's Addiction, early in version of Jane's Addiction. Mm. I was like, "What are these guys? What's this performance? Who's this fucker?
Yeah,
Jesus Christ!" So you take all those things and you put them into a pot, and that's all my beginnings. You know, like. I was totally into grunge and Soundgarden and Nirvana. They're very inspiring. But then we listened to Come Down. That's nicked from Billy Cobham. That doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. That's Billy Cobham. That's Massive Attack. Mm-hmm. So it's like I was always trying to do those things. Then that's why I did the science of that. I did Steve Albini record because it's like live.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I need a hi-fi record. I did science of things. Do the English, get a trip hop, little trippy. And there's a Tricky Times and Portishead and Blur and... Everything was all bubbling like that. So I was like, a bit of rock with that. And then I was like, fuck that. I need to do like a heavy record. So I went off and did whatever was after that. And it's always been this cycle of, and now I just make heavy records. Now it's just heavy, 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 heavy.
Yeah.
The next record is so heavy. The Kingdom was heavy. And this is super heavy, the new one. Heavy is so funny. Because people are like, aren't you meant to be sitting down now? I was like, fuck it. No, I'm going to fucking go out in flames, motherfucker.
As you should.
Absolutely. So that's it. So that's my journey. That's what I try to tell these people, you know, explain it, that the more you dive into yourself, the more interesting you potentially become.
Yeah.
And the less you show of yourself, the less interesting you become, because we don't need a 16-year-old kid playing like Eddie Van Halen. Mm-hmm. No one needs that. Nobody.
We need Eddie Van Halen. Well, you mentioned Steve Albini. What was it like working with him? Because to me, he sort of was the anti-Mutt Lang in a sense, whereas, you know, Mutt is full production and Steve is full sort of soul and get to the essence.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Talk to me about working with him.
Yeah, Steve doesn't even like to be accredited as a producer on albums anymore.
He calls them pig points. He doesn't want pig points. In fact, it's his wife's 50th birthday on Wednesday in Chicago, and we just sent a birthday video for her. So I've stayed excellent friends with Steve and Heather, very close friends, really good friends of mine. Working with him was a dream because I'd grown up on, the Pixies, Bone Machine. Surfer Rosa was a record that literally, like this, Never Mind the Bollocks was a big record. Mm-hmm. The Joshua Tree. Probably Appetite for Destruction.
Great album. And you got Tom Zutet on your show.
I never came across him actually. And is he a mentor? And then you had that was it. And then so those were big records to me. So when I heard that, so when we had success with and Rid of Me, that record, the PJ Harvey record, Rid of Me, was phenomenal. And it was a very crazy move. We were very compared to Nirvana, and it was a bit commercial suicide. Was it the right thing to go and work with a person that had done the record with them? Mm-hmm. But when I went for lunch with Steve in Greektown in Chicago, I don't know. I just was like, he was such a hero of mine. And we discussed the Pixies and the making of Surfer Rosa. It took 9 days to do it. Mm. And I just thought if anyone could pick up the band, what we'd accrued being on the road for 3 years, it would be him. And we did. We really got that. Now, when I listen back to that record, I'm like, damn, man, look, I couldn't have fucking sung that another couple of times. I'm like, you know, just some really out of tune singing.
Yeah, but that's there's a perfection in the imperfection.
Yes. And that if you
need essence. It needs soul.
So he just did that. We did. I'll give you an example. Like normally when you play with a string section, you know, I might record a guide vocal, a guide track, sing to it, Then replay the guitar, then sit back while the players come in, they play around me, then I go back in, maybe I sing it again, and then it's all said and done. We look like we've all been musicians from the 60s playing together. Well, we haven't at all. We've done it piecemeal.
Right.
But Steve's like, no. You're playing with him. Mm-hmm. So I had to sit and play. And I mean, I'm not even a good guitar player now. I don't know what the fuck I was like then. So there I am struggling with these beautiful musicians. But and just thinking, don't fuck up, get to the end of the song. Because, you know, he doesn't do the,
right.
He doesn't do much editing.
Do the punch-ins and all this
stuff.
There's
no comp.
No. One time I said to him, hey, Steve, I was thinking about, the only thing I don't agree with Steve is he's not the Beach Boys. Now, I think at studios, you should experiment. I think experimentation in the studio, I love Brian Eno. So the idea of not experimenting in the studio is like almost, it's hard for me. You know, I love painters. They spend hours in studios. Well, of course you experiment.
Well, it's part of the fun.
Great moment. Once I said to Steve, I was thinking about this this harmony. Now you're allowed to do a harmony if it's compositionally intended. You're not allowed to have a secondary inspirational moment for some reason, right? Steve's weird, right? Okay.
Weird.
So I said, Steve, can I put a harmony on this bit? I promise you, I thought of it as I wrote the song. You know, it's no problem. I've always thought of it. This harmony is as old as the song itself. So he goes, okay. So I go out and sing it, and I look at the track sheet afterwards, and I was going to call the record this, but I wrote for Razorblade Suitcase. I looked at the track listing of number 14. It had track 14, Pointless Harmony.
Ah, yes. That's really bizarre that you had to have it like a preconceived thing for him to let you record it.
I don't want to know what to tell you. After he worked with us, he did get the call from Page and Plant, and he did the Page Plant record. There, he shut it. You know, he didn't say much and just drank his half a pint of cider, and ate his meals and just worked as long as they wanted. So
right.
He did plenty of experimentation.
Well,
he'd do stuff like crazy stuff, like put a tin foil between the strings to make it sing. I was like, come on, Steve, just flex your stuff, you know. So I forced him to do stuff with us. He was fantastic. He's great.
Wow, he's that's great. Awesome.
And by the way, if you listen to like early Sabbath and stuff, it's full of time signature mistakes. It's full of
right.
But that's what we love.
Well, it's human. They're human records.
Yeah.
You know, it's not put on the grid and quantized and, you know, made robotic. Yeah. And those records that, you know, I mean, you listen to the Tad records and even, you know, like the Breeders and Jesus Lizard, who you guys toured with late 90s. I mean, one of my favorite Albini records is the John Spencer Blues Explosion.
Like, oh, man.
Incredible bands, you know. Yeah, talking about the Jesus Lizard, do you have any tales from that tour you guys did together in like the late 90s? My buddy Adam asked me
to ask
you.
I've been trying to get a hold of David through the pandemic, and he lives in LA now. He's an actor, and we are really, I haven't seen him, but he's like my brother. I love him so much, and he's such a talented man. Probably my favorite memory, I would say July 4th, Hershey Park. And he's wearing a chef's hat, no underwear, a chef's apron, and cowboy boots, and just does the show stark naked. But what's beautiful about him, and then in the crowd, nuts everywhere, and just, you know, now probably couldn't do it now, you know, probably get in trouble. But what was the best thing about his performance? Now, he's probably my favorite performer ever I've seen to watch. I love that band. In fact, I just got Tomahawk have just brought out a new record, and Dwayne just sent me the copy and a Jesus Lizard t-shirt. So it just was a real learning experience, because he just defies. I mean, I don't know what, he's very Pere Ubu, you know, that's where the Jesus Lizard, very Pere Ubu, but what a freaking band. And so tight and strong. It was such an honor. That was the best tour I've ever done, with Souls, my band from Sweden, and them, and then us. That was, you know, I mean, I'm really happy now, but when I think of that, that was a lot of happens too.
Those were good times.
Great tour.
Well, Kingdom's available now, plus this great new TV show. Is it nice?
Which is basically our life, right?
Yeah, pretty
Amazon,
much.
It was Christmas every day from Amazon. I bought that fucker his boat. Jesus Christ, my kids have got my password. I'm screwed.
I know.
Dude, same day shipping. That'll ruin your credit card.
Talk to me just real quick about the Kingdom, because you haven't been able to tour on it. So do you get back in there and make a follow-up right away, or do you say, no, I'm going to tour this thing before
Hell no,
I make
I'm already, I'm halfway through a bunch of songs.
Oh, nice.
And then I also plan to go collaborate, see what the band have got, see what Tyler's got. You know, I'm open to, I just want to do a great record. So I'm already 10 songs in to a new record. And I think that, you know, we had 30 million plays off of The Kingdom.
Now, yeah.
would we have had 100 million if we'd been on tour? Maybe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, look, people were dying. We stayed safe. The world collapsed. I didn't moan for 1 minute about it. It's just, everyone's dealing with different situations. And it's going to be like, I know people are saying it, but I think it's going to be like the roaring 20s. You know, when we go mm-hmm. back, I want everyone to come to the shows and lose inhibitions and have fun and hang out. It's going to be such a celebration of life, you know? So I think it'd be smart if you guys agree, you know, make a new record and then go later in the year or come next year and tour everything, tour all the records. Who cares? You know, just be great.
Play it
be
all. Good. Are you one of those good. Artists that's kind of like afraid of the past discography? Because there are certain artists out there like, oh, we're not playing the old stuff. We're just playing the new stuff. Don't talk to us even about the old stuff.
Well, no, I don't believe in that. Being that dogmatic, because obviously that those old songs bought these headphones. The new songs didn't buy these headphones. So
not yet.
Right. Not at 1 cent a stream.
So no, I don't have that. I look at those songs with such gratitude that I have to find a balance. I think of it like when I go and see a show, if I go and see the Pumpkins, they better play the fucking hits as well as some things. Else I'm just like, what's the point? So you just got to play do the balance. The challenging thing is the last couple of tours we've done, these sort of festival type rotating headline, which bands we love. We've done it with STP, with Live. We're about to do it with STP again in Australia. The only complaint I would have is you only play an hour. And in that hour, now it's a festival set. I got to play Glycerine. I got to play Come Down. I got to play Machine Head. I got to play Zen.
Yeah.
I got to play Little Things. I just got to, or else people are like, fuck that guy.
He Flowers on a Grave.
Yeah. So now you use six. Now you've only got four left. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about a new record, talking about The Kingdom. It's a lot. So I don't want to do the, much as I love Dave and the Foos, the 3.5 hour shows, I'm not strong enough to do vocally or physically. So I don't think that's a bit long for me, but I do think an hour 45 show makes sense when you want to play the number of songs. It just does.
You get the gist
not
of
more
it.
Than that. Yeah. And two hours is too much. Nobody needs that. But I think 1 hour 30 set and then a pause and then a 10 minute encore. That's my happy time. That's my happy space.
As Mitch would say, just drop the drum solo and the guitar solo and put two more songs in.
Yeah, that's what I say. No need to waste song space on the drum solo. I'm just sorry.
Well,
nobody
I love it.
Nobody bought a ticket and goes, man, I hope they have a drum solo tonight. Oh, man. No.
The biggest we've done is we have an intro of a song called Testosterone, which starts with drums. And the only drum solos we ever had is the one time it was the drummer's birthday. We had him start the song and we just quit, left the stage.
Nice.
I don't know how long he was there for, but it was good drama. It just was like, Jesus fucking Christ, come back. You
know? Well, that's awesome.
Do that again. That I approve of. Comedy, I'm for. All for comedy.
Yeah. One more question.
You know Shellac? You know Shellac with Steve Albini's band? Do you know much about Shellac?
Mm-mm.
They're my favorite singular band. Of all time.
Really?
I love Shellac. Oh my God.
Okay.
The best band to see live ever. I have traveled. I took Gwen to Belfast to see Shellac.
Wow.
That's how dedicated I am. Yeah. I took Gwen Stefani to Belfast. Put a little bit of lead in her pencil, you know, give her a bit of humanity.
I'm waiting for you to pull out your Shellac membership card, like out of your wallet or something.
You know? I'm a member of that fraternity. They're very good friends of mine. And they do this wonderful thing at the end of their shows where the guy's playing drums and Steve and Bob, they not only do a thing, then they catch the cymbals, they start to take his whole kit off the stage. They don't have, obviously, they're too cool for roadies. So they'll take his... So they do walking off with a crash cymbal, ride cymbal.
Oh, that's awesome!
Toms, and
they
he's
deconstruct.
Playing.
That's a good. That's playing. A good shtick.
Great. Google it. You'll see it on YouTube. It's all over YouTube.
Oh, my buddy Adam's going to love that story. That's great.
I approve of that. That's a good visual. That's a smart visual, actually.
Just start rolling the amps off. Why not?
The fans are like, we want more. And they're like, we can't. Everything's gone.
The drummer plays in the front. The drummer is the center, and the other two are either side of him. So it's a different look. It's something else. It's another dimension. I love.
Yeah, you guys gotta nick that bit. Just the next Bush show. Just start taking all the gear off the stage mid song.
Yeah, my band, they're a little bit mollycoddled for that. They're not lifting too much stuff. They're not lifters. I don't know about that.
Get the opening band to lift the stuff off. Anyway.
All right. Well, Gavin, this is awesome. Running out of time. Check out The Kingdom. It's available now where music is sold, and no cover very soon, which is very exciting. It's going to be my new favorite show.
Well, let's hope so. And don't hate me for it. I try to be honest.
No, listen, you're there. Alice Cooper's there.
Lizzie Hale, what more do you want?
Do you want any questions? Do you want anything about Alice Cooper? Any dish on?
Oh, Mitch, there's your chance. There's your window.
Well, the one thing is I'm very familiar with the Cooper camp. I've met them and interviewed them plenty of times. But yeah, what's your great Alice Cooper story? Did he give you the old man perspective, for lack of a better word?
That's a little clunky. He reminded me of when I was lucky enough to meet Tom Waits. And it was the lesson in the humility of greatness. And it's a beautiful thing. You know, I've met so many people in this incredible journey I've been on and still on. And, you know, the fair to middling musicians that you meet are usually the biggest bunch of assholes you meet. Mm-hmm. And the cream of the crop, the ones with the extraterrestrial vision, careers, someone like Mr. Alice Cooper, is a beautiful person, great perspective, full of wisdom, insight, and kindness. And it's a great sort of inspirational lesson of how to be as a human being, because he's like the least jerky guy in the room. You know, he's the coolest guy being in the troubadour. So it was a real pleasure being around him.
He's an absolute sweetheart. And I'll tell you this.
And a great golfer. He's a scratch two. He's two. And I don't know golf. I actually hate golf. It's a terrible sport, I think.
It's the most boring shit ever.
It's an entitled, horrific white guy.
Like a drum solo.
Do you know, there was one time I was in Portugal. We had a couple of days off and I went off to play my tennis and I was wandering around drinking local wine all day long, having a laugh. And I walked into the lobby and I heard this voice say, "Hey, Gav, what are you doing?" I walked past my drummer and my bass player. They're going to play golf and they were dressed in their golf clothes.
Oh, boy.
They were like such jerks. I walked right past them. I didn't know them. And I'm 20 years straight. And that, you know, sort of like their slacks and that look, they're just like, I don't know, Aryans on a weekend out, you know.
The like, checkered pants and the vest.
There's this Orange County racist people.
Oh, God. Oh, that's great. Well, we're running out of time, so this was great, Gav. Anything else you want to say before we go?
Thanks for having me, you know, and I'm working on the new record.
Good.
Awesome.
Bring it on.
Awesome.
Let's do another show in Montreal. 9 years has been too long.
Yep. Are you guys in Montreal?
Yes.
Oh my God. So you have all the most incredible food up there. It's
yep.
Just, oh my God.
Yeah, but next time you're in town, I'll take you to the places. Let me know.
You will?
Yeah, he knows the places. Jeremy,
what's
by
your
the
favorite
way.
Place?
Oh, what's there's so many. Place? I mean, she's. Are you vegan? You vegetarian?
No, I'm an omnivore.
I'll take it to Joe Beef.
Indian food. How about Indian food?
I'll bring it to Joe Beef or Atma for a curry. Oh,
Joe Beef is my favorite restaurant. I went there.
Yeah, that's the spot.
I went to Joe Beef. I had the big night there.
Oh,
that's
great.
My jam. I went there. I love those guys.
Yeah. So I'll bring you to a couple of other places that are a little bit more on the DL that only the in people know. And you'll
Atma
love it.
Atma for Indian food. Yeah. We got you covered.
All right. I'm a real good fun pig.
Perfect. Same.
All right.
Treat. Our treat.
Thanks, Gavin.
The Jeremy White Podcast. Tuesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Available wherever you get your podcasts.